Hello, and welcome back to We Are the Weirdos, Mister, the podcast for all things cult, camp, queer, and creepy. I am your host, Hillary Michelle Post, and I'm joined by my sister, Lacey Mason. Hey, Lacey.
Happy holidays, weirdos.
And we are recording in person instead of over Skype, which is very rare. It's been a crazy couple of weeks. Let's see. So last Friday, I drove to Ohio, drove straight to my dad's house, spent the evening there, then that night drove to Lacey's, crashed at Lacey's house, got up the next morning, drove all the way to Heather's house, had Heather threw a great Thanksgiving, Friendsgiving party, got to see everybody there, crashed at Heather's, got up, drove back to Lacey's, and then the next day, Lacey and I were supposed to get up and drive to North Carolina. And I woke up and I had food poisoning. So I was sick in bed all day. And then the next day, I rallied and we drove to back to North Carolina. So I did all of that within the span of like 5 days. And now we're back home in North Carolina and Lacey and I have been chilling and relaxing and getting to spend time with mom and the family, and it's been great.
Wonderful.
So chaos reigns, but now it's been chill for the past few days. Until a few days from now when we have to drive all the way back to North Carolina, or back to Ohio. And then I'll probably crash at Lacey's again some more because I'll be too tired to drive. But okay. That drive is, it's deceptively quick. Whenever I tell people, they're always like, well, how long does it take you to get to Ohio? When I tell them 7 hours, they're like, oh, that's nothing. I'm like, you're right. I mean, it could be much worse. It's not that hard of a drive. But when you do it, you're just like, oh, so tired.
You drive through West Virginia for like 4 days, it feels like.
Oh my God. It really, really does. You drive through so much. I don't feel like I'm that deep into North Carolina, but I feel like I have to drive through North Carolina for ever. Like, get me out of the taking so long. It's a lot. Not that I'm complaining. I'm glad I got my sister. I'm glad I got to kidnap her and force her to do this with me. She was complaining yesterday. She's like, oh, you're going to put me to work? I was like, oh, we're going to sit and watch a movie and then talk about it. It's going to be real strenuous for us all.
We're drinking.
Oh, yes. We're having moonshine and apple cider. So, at what? 1 in the afternoon? It's vacation. It's a holiday. It's good shit. So, today is our third installment of Happy Holidays. And it's our celebration of queer Christmas films that we've been doing the past couple months. And for this episode, we will be talking about the new Netflix film, Single All the Way. Lacey and I literally just finished it like 10 minutes ago. Overall, I thought it was super cute. What did you think?
It was cute.
I went in not knowing anything about it. I didn't even watch the full trailer. I just seen like little blips here and there about it, but I knew I wanted to do it. Again, because it's on Netflix and something easy to acquire, not anything I have to pay for. Unlike the movies Heather and I are going to talk about here in a couple weeks, that's a whole saga on its own. Poor Heather. Please donate to my podcast so I can pay Heather back for all the money she spends on movies. So I can pay everybody back. I feel so bad how many times I've forced people to rent stuff. But this one was free, motherfuckers, so if you have Netflix, you should check it out. It stars Michael Urie, who I know best from Broadway stuff, but according to Lacey, he was on Ugly Betty, which I never watched.
Mark from Uncle Betty. Jesus. This is going great. Mark, he's so cute.
He's very cute. I love Michael Urie. And the other lead, I looked him up and he has like 2 IMDb credits. He's like been in nothing. He must have, $10 says he was a model that got plucked for this because he's adorable.
Whoosh.
Film was directed by Michael Mayer, not to be confused with the other Michael Mayer. This is the Michael Mayer who is primarily known for Broadway work as well. He directed Spring Awakening and the revival of Thoroughly Modern Millie and the revival of You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. Like, he's really affluent Broadway director, and film and television and opera and all sorts of stuff. But I was surprised to see him do this. This is something a little different, I guess. but a good fit with him and Michael, I suppose. It was just filmed last year in Quebec. It seemed like they cranked it out really fast, like they do with a lot of Christmas movies here lately, I feel like. And it feels like it is Netflix's first queer Christmas movie that they produced themselves, not that they bought elsewhere, like New York Christmas Wedding. And it feels like it's their answer to Happiest Season.
Mm.
And I feel like a lot like Happiest Season, this movie has a lot of the same... Well, it's different in one major way, and that there's no coming out drama, which I love. Anytime there's a holiday movie, or queer movie in general, frankly, that isn't all centered around the drama of coming out, that's really rare, and it's really refreshing. Same thing with Dashing in December. There's none of that drama. Whereas Happiest Season, that's all it is that drama. But what it does have in common with Happiest Season is that it's the typical trappings of a Christmas movie, but is elevated by the cast.
Yeah.
Like, do you agree?
Yeah.
The cast is so good and so funny and so natural that even though this movie is so full of, like, Christmas movie cliches, it doesn't feel like a cheap Christmas movie. Mm-hmm. It feels like a real good movie. There's also Kathy and Jimmy, Barry Bostwick, Jennifer Coolidge. The woman who plays Jocelyn from Schitt's Creek, whose name escapes me at the moment. Robertson is her name. Jennifer Robertson. Yeah, it's really cute. So we'll just dive into the plot, I guess. It took me a minute. The movie starts with this sexy Santa photo shoot, right? And it takes a while to establish what it is Peter actually does. It's like, is he an art director for photo shoots or anything? But we find out later that he, like, works in social media marketing,
Yeah.
So he's working at this sexy Santa photo shoot where all the Santas have shaving cream beards.
I so have to try this.
Tell the listeners about your goals of being a Santa.
I just want to be fucking Santa, okay? I know I have boobs, but I want to be on the Macy's float. I want to be Santa. I'm considering having a big party in my hometown and feeding everyone and buying gifts for all the children just so I can be Santa and nobody can tell me no. But that's goals. I just want to be Santa. I fuck Mrs. Claus. She's great. I want to have the beard.
Oh, God. What's funny about this opening scene, too, when he's taking the pictures, which I guess pays off later, but they're not good.
Mm-mm.
I was watching the monitor as all these pictures are popping up. I'm just like, these are horrible.
You can't just put a bunch of good-looking guys in front of a camera and think it's just going to work out. Yeah. There still has to be some kind
of... You have to, like, have dynamic photography going on at the same time. Just can't be, like, stand there. Okay. Peter explains to another character that they're all going to go to this party, and that his boyfriend is coming, and he says that it's his boyfriend of 3 months and 22 days. And that he's really excited about this relationship. We see Peter back at his house before the party and establish that he's a plant gay. Has a bunch of plants, loves plants, which is an interesting... You don't see that often. You know what I mean? There's so many cliche, like, jobs that people have in these movies. You never see, I like plants. I'm like, okay, cool.
It's the sign of the times. It's like, all of a sudden, the big thing. Like, Corona came and everybody's like, well, I can't have friends, but I can have a fern.
Well, it's like our whole generation, everything has shifted. No one has kids now. So Now pets are kids. And plants are pets. Lacey can tell you. Lacey is a plant queen herself. Was that it? Was it just Corona? You were just bored?
No. I've always been into them in the summertime. But I don't know. Maybe that's what it was. I found, because I built my girl porch, mm-hmm. and I just found comfort in it. Like, it just made me feel good to be sitting amongst the greens. So I like to talk to them, and I feel accomplished, because I didn't always used to kill everything, so I don't do it anymore, so I can... I brought all my plants in. Almost everything's still alive from summer. It's great.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I suck at anything that requires keeping something alive other than my cat. I'm like, no, no, no. Too much work.
We built an apartment for our children, which apparently are our cats. And then we moved the pets, which are the plants, into the apartment. So they all have their own little room, and it's wonderful.
I like it, too. I like that little space out there. It's nice. Well, after we establish Peter's plant gayness, we meet his roommate and best friend, Nick, and his dog, Emmett. Emmett is so cute. What kind of dog do you reckon he is?
He's got to be mixed up.
Yeah.
He's just got this big, wide, black nose on this pretty white face. Mm.
He looks like a some type of Labrador-type mixed thing, but he's this bright white, and he's so cute. And Nick is so cute. Super cute. That's another bonus of this movie. Not only is it gay, it's an interracial romance, which I love that shit. I eat that shit up. Peter has set out an outfit for Nick to wear at the party because Nick doesn't want to go, but Peter's kind of forcing him. And when you see them together at the party, they're wearing like the exact same outfit. He's dressed him exactly like him. It's so codependent and adorable. In my notes, I just have, oh my god, they match. I wrote down, I was like, oh, Peter's outfit is ugly. And then Nick walks up and he's wearing the same outfit. I was like, oh, Jesus, there's two of them. And Peter keeps talking about his boyfriend. But like every time he talks about it, he mentions that he's at the hospital because he works at a hospital because he's a doctor because he's at the hospital.
What do I have to do to get cardiac arrested?
He's a cardiologist, which is very extra fancy, I suppose. What kind of doctor is the hottest to you, do you think? What kind of doctor would you be like, ooh, most impressed with?
I don't know, if it works with kids.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that tracks. I would go with that, too. Oh, my God.
Please. A vet.
A vet would be.
An animal doctor. Yeah.
To be honest, yeah, probably. Look at that cat.
Parkour!
We're recording by the kitchen window, and Lucky's outside, just perched on the tallest truck she can get on, reigning over her land. She's so cute. Bob, do you want to be on the podcast? Aw, one of these days I'm going to get Bob to meow onto the podcast. Him toot. So yes, Peter's boyfriend of 3 months and 22 days is a cardiologist, and we're waiting for him to arrive at the party. He comes fashionably late. And at the party, they discuss him coming home with Peter and meeting his family. Now, they've been together 3 months, 22 days. What is the time frame, in your opinion, for, like, meeting family?
I honestly think that depends on how it goes. But I'm, like, a wifer. I'm like, if you're my boyfriend, we're married next week. So I don't know. Like, in his case, I understood why. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think it is too soon, but it was, you know, just based on he wanted to, you know, impress his family. So, yeah. I mean, it made sense to me. I would say 6.
Yeah.
No, let me say it this way. Just to go home and meet him, maybe have some dinner, see if everybody jives, is fine. To bring someone home for a holiday is definitely, like, at least a 6-month thing, mm-hmm. I would say.
Yeah. Especially, like, not to generalize about men or gay people, but I'm going to generalize about men and gay people. 3 months and 22 days is, like, for dog years, which is gay boy years, that's a while.
Well, so maybe that's
like, fair. It's not like a long time to go without meeting the family. I mean, like, that's a long time to be with somebody.
Be with somebody, yeah.
Now I'm thinking of that Crazy Ex-Girlfriend song, let's generalize about men. So the boyfriend agrees. And then we see this basically a montage of Peter talking, FaceTiming with his family. Because we see Kathy and Jimmy as his mom, and Barry's Boswick as his dad. Jocelyn from Schitt's Creek is his sister, and he has another younger sister. We learned that Nick works for Task Rabbit, which I forget what the actual real life equivalent of that app is called. That's a real thing that you do, but basically, you do errands for people. It's like,
did he work for it or did he create it himself?
I think he works for it.
Okay.
Just kind of like just like Uber or DoorDash, you just go onto the app and there's tasks for you to do. And while Nick is doing one of his tasks, he was paid to put lights up for somebody at somebody's house. He's on this lady's roof. My cat's biting me. Quit biting. Be nice. While he's up there, I missed part of it, but she's like talking about how the last guy that was up there fucking fell off the roof and died. And he's like, ma'am, can I please like focus on this so I don't fall off and die? It'd be great. But her husband comes home, and lo and behold, it's the boyfriend. So not only is Peter's boyfriend cheating on him and married with children, he's also straight. Well, in a straight relationship. Anyway. So, of course, Peter's all upset. And Nick checks on him while he's packing to go for his trip. And he's like, how long are you going for? And he's like, 10 days. And he's like, do you need the Tower of Sweaters? And there's a tower, like, as tall as Peter sitting in the suitcase. And Peter's just talking about how he will just, you know, be alone forever and just be a gunkle and a plant gay and die happy like that. And so I was like, oh, I want to be a, you know, a gay uncle. And Lacey's like, you'd be a gant. I was like, oh God, I hate that word. I don't want to be a gant. And Lacey's like, you'd be a lesbian. I was like, here we go. I like that. I'll keep that. So Peter, the thing about Peter's family is that they're like really obsessed and hung up and involved in his love life. So they already know Nick, but Peter comes up with the idea of bringing Nick home with him for the holidays and lying and saying that they're in a relationship. So then Peter won't come off as single and his family will get off his dick. That's a really famous trope in like Hallmark movies and in fan fiction, the pretending to be dating trope. I think Mom and I have seen like 3 so far this year. Would you ever do that to get your family off your back? Lie about being in a relationship? She's shaking her head on the podcast.
Oh, no. My bad. No. No, I would not.
Too much work. I don't give a shit enough about what my family thinks. Family.
I'm a grown ass man. I don't give a shit. Grown ass
man. I'm an independent boss act. I don't need it. Oh God.
We're lucky though. Like we don't, at least in my experience, my family isn't. We're not meddlers.
Right.
We're just. Are you happy? Great. Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. Mom would rather me be safe and at home than dating, and you know, I mean, she wouldn't care if she didn't care when I date, but less to worry about. Yeah. I'm gonna be dead in a ditch somewhere.
Yep.
Which is the reality of being a single woman. It's like, I'm gonna go on a date. It's like, okay, well, great, you're going to meet a stranger. Don't die. Gay, straight, whatever, it doesn't matter. No matter who you're going out and meeting, it's always a risk. It sucks. What did my notes mean? Oh, okay. I'm trying to decipher my own notes. But, so, Peter is trying to convince Nick in on this plan, right? And it's a real low blow because he goes for the mom stuff. So Nick's mom is dead. And so he's playing the, you know, you can't just sit around and reminisce about your Christmases with your mom. You have to live life, blah, blah, blah. Which I thought that was kind of low, in my opinion.
It worked.
It worked, but I was like, that's tacky.
Nah, I mean, it seems more like something that would come from a husband.
Yeah.
Than a roommate.
Yeah, totally. When Nick shows concern about being able to afford a next day plane ticket, Peter points out the fact that he has a bunch of money saved up because Nick had a children's book published about his dog Emmett, which, how cute is that?
That's so sweet.
So he agrees, and they fly to New Hampshire, from LA to New Hampshire. And when they pull up, the mom, Kathy and Jimmy's character, Carol, is waiting in the driveway holding a sign that she made with her Cricut. It's like a running joke is that she makes signs now. I really hope everyone can hear on the mic my cat just getting into shit in the background to get attention.
He's trying to get us to pay attention.
He's like, feed me!
Those are our gingerbread houses, son. Quit!
It's nowhere even close to time for dinner, either. I feed them at 4. It is 1:30. And he's just being a pest. Because he slept all day, and now he's antsy.
Mm-hmm.
Lord. But she's standing in the driveway holding this sign that says, Slay Queen, S-L-E-I-G-H, Slay Queen. Jesus. And she insists to the whole month of December that everyone call her Christmas Carol. She's that festive.
These people are goals. This family is goals. They're just obsessed with each other, but in a good way.
Yeah. That is the one thing. There's like no one, well, there's Aunt Sandy, but we'll get to Aunt Sandy. But everyone is really chill and normal and nice and caring, and there's no drama there. Like, everyone kind of meddles too much, but not in a toxic way. So Peter finds out that his mom has set him up on a blind date. So there goes the whole fake dating subplot. They can't even do that because before they could be like, oh, we're dating, he gets strong-armed into agreeing to go on this blind date.
Well, basically because Nick blew it.
Yeah.
And Nick's like, yeah, go.
Yeah, totally. Nick could have been like, oh, no, well, because we're in, but he encourages him to go, which, A, is stupid of Nick because Nick totally loves Peter. But it also was a good bait and switch because when you're going into the movie, you think you know what you're getting into because it's that trope. Jesus Christ. I'm keeping all of this in,
it's
by the way.
Daddy versus Bob. In this landy shanty.
Lacey brought Christmas gifts in this cardboard box. And she like made it into a little house for the kitties, and throughout the past couple days it has been like knocked over and caved in, and now with the slanty shanty it's just like barely standing at a 45 degree angle and the cats are fighting in it. Good Lord. Anyway. Anywho, so you think you know the trope going in, that, like I said, that trope that's used all the time, but at the, you know, within, before the end of the first act, it's like, nope, we're not even doing that. Switcheroo. So, Peter is now going to have to go on this blind date with Carol's trainer. And meanwhile, Barry Boswick, the dad, whose name I never did catch, he will henceforth just be Barry Boswick, asks Nick to like help fix a leaky pipe in the basement. Like, they know that Nick is really handy. So he immediately, poor guy.
I hate my plumber. He smells like roast beef.
So Nick immediately gets tasked with doing stuff. There's even like, there's that moment where Captain Jimmy is like trying to get on Facebook to show Peter something, and she doesn't know how. And I was like, oh Jesus, that's too real. That moment where you have to help your mom log on to social media.
And then you gotta look at the funny picture she scrolls through for a minute.
Yeah, whatever she went on Facebook for, you're never actually going to see it. Because we're going to get distracted by 20 cat videos and someone's new baby and... Oh, Lord. What is it about? Like, as soon as... We'll say I hit 55, then they lose all ability to use electronics.
What's with mom, like, FaceTimes every day, but she's like, I don't know how to turn the flash off on my camera. What the fuck?
Oh, yeah, last night we went, and looked at Christmas lights at this, like, drive-through Christmas light exhibit thingy. It was really fun, but yeah, mom was on the struggle bus with her phone trying to take pictures and videos and stuff. Wasn't quite working out. My favorite part of that whole thing, a couple different spots in the route, they had these little snowman statues that had foam blowers and fans built into them to blow this foam that looked like snow. Well, one of them had gotten so backed up that he was just a giant ball of foam. You couldn't even see the statue anymore. He was just a glowing, vibrating ball of foam. It was so funny.
I rolled my window down to take a picture, and I got a face full of the foam.
Oh, it was so funny. I don't know why that tickled me so much, but as soon as I saw it, I about peed my pants. So Peter's sister Lisa and her two daughters show up, and her hunky husband.
He was hunky, wasn't he?
Yeah. I thought that was going to be more of a plot point, was Lisa's hunky husband, but he was just there. And the younger sister Ashley and her two sons and her cute husband. I didn't catch any of the children's names, but I came to love those nieces. Like, I am those nieces. They're so relatable.
I feel like the boys were both S names.
Yeah.
Like Steven and Sam or something like that.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And we meet Aunt Sandy, played by Jennifer Coolidge, queer icon. I want to be Aunt Sandy when I grow up. Just
hell yes.
Just in leopard print and drunk and lascivious and adorable. I love her.
There's just amazing sets of boobs in this movie. Like, everywhere you look, boobs.
Yeah. There's a couple different times where we're just like, God, she's stacked. Lord knows Jennifer Coolidge is. I was telling Lacey the other day, Heather and I had a miscommunication where I was talking about my love for Jennifer Tilly. Because God knows, love me some Jennifer Tilly. Heather thought I was talking about Jennifer Coolidge. And it took us a few minutes to get it straightened out. It was very confusing.
She was picturing you doing it with Stifler's mom.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't kick her out of bed.
No.
But Jennifer Tilly is like my wife. Meet Aunt Sandy, blah, blah, blah. Sandy's wearing, she stole a couple of ornaments off of Carol's tree and is wearing them as earrings. There's a big point of contention about the tree. This was so relatable too.
Yes.
Like every year they would have a live tree, but live trees are a huge pain in the asses, especially for moms who are the ones that end up being responsible for watering it and cleaning up after it and doing all that shit. So she got her ass a fancy white plastic tree that she loved, and everything was matchy-matchy and perfect, and everyone else hated it. I liked it, personally. Did you like it?
I liked the look. She just kind of had some, I don't know, the ornaments were not spread to my...
It was not feng shui. It needed to be.
Yes, but yeah, the look was great.
It needed to be zhuzhed, but otherwise, yeah. I felt bad for her. But it also just reminded me of mom. Like, that'd be mom. She's like, well, this year the tree's going to be all this. It's going to be... And you're like...
And the kids are like, where's the ornament?
The first year mom ever did, like, a really cute, like, Martha Stewart matchy-matchy tree lace. And I were like, what the fuck? What about the stuff we made? You know, the hideous, like, popsicle stick shit that kids make. Nick waking up. Oh. The next morning, Peter's asleep. Well, next afternoon, really, because he has jet lag. Peter's asleep, and there's a loud knock on his window. And Peter's asleep, and there's a loud knock on his window. And it's Nick on a ladder. He's working on putting lights up for the family. And they're just talking through a window. Which I wouldn't be just, like, casually hanging out on a ladder. But that's because I'm terrified of heights. Oh, now you... Are you going to start? Now Dally's got the zoomies. Here we go. Oh, well. Come here. Hi. You want to be on a podcast? But he, like, what does he do? He convinces Peter, he's trying to convince Peter to go on the date, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he convinces Peter to go on the date. So Peter gets up and gets ready. And he's at, like, a coffee shop. And he's getting pictures from the photo shoot that we saw him do at the beginning for his job, and he's getting frustrated because they're not good or someone's giving him shit, something happens, and he quotes Clue. He's like, flames on the side of my face. It's just like my favorite line. I quote all the time. But then he goes to the gym to meet with Carol's trainer, is blind date James, who is very hunky.
Ooh, yes. And just, like, genuinely nice. Like, super, super sweet. I couldn't find one flaw with this person.
Yeah, and that's immediately you're like, well, you know that Nick and Peter are going to end up together. So you're the whole movie, and it never happens, spoiler alert, but the whole time you're just waiting for the other shoe to drop. Because you're waiting for something to be wrong with James, and there never is, which I thought was refreshing. These fucking cats, dude. I also like the fact that this blind date is, like, in the afternoon. It's like an afternoon coffee date, which is good because that lowers the stakes.
Mm-hmm.
But they have coffee and they have a lovely date, and then James helps him pick out a live Christmas tree to take home to replace Carol's white one that everyone hates.
Because, you know, fuck Mom.
Yeah, fuck Mom and everything she does for the family. We're just going to usurp her and surprise her with this tree that is going to be her responsibility. Mm. Quit. Be nice. And he helps Peter to load the tree onto the car. And then after the date, Peter goes to a wine store and runs into Nick, who also went to the wine store because they were doing a wrapping party and they desperately needed wine.
Can you imagine? Okay, so Mom makes all the kids bring their gifts to the house unwrapped. So they have to haul everything from their house that they purchased to there and wrap in separate rooms. Everybody has to wrap at the same time together, but apart.
It makes no sense. And it would be a huge pain in the ass of trying to... There's no surprise. Everyone's going to see their shit.
And they were, like, sitting there swapping, like, what'd you get me? Let's see what Mom got me. It's like us.
Yeah. Mom just doesn't even tell us anymore what we got each other. What she got for Lacey and I, because we just tell each other.
Since we were kids, laying in bed, like, I'll tell you something if you tell me something.
And to be fair, with the exception of a couple things that even Lacey knows about, I don't know a single fucking thing that you got this year, dude. She didn't tell me shit. And I pointed that out. I was like, I don't even know anything you got, Lacey. And she's like, because I don't fucking trust you. I was like, whoa.
Whoa.
Okay. Fair enough. She's such a hypocrite, though, because the other day she was like, did somebody get me such and such? Because if not, I'm going to get it for myself. I'm like, because she wanted it that bad. I'm just like, yes, Jesus Christ, someone got it for you. Just don't get anything for yourself.
What was it?
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
She's so... She acts... What she does is what I do, which is ask for a bunch of things so that you can pick and choose from the things and be surprised. But
she can't wait to figure out what people have bought her and what they haven't.
Well, which is her problem, but shouldn't be a problem because in reality, I make sure she gets all of the things. I don't do the pick and choose thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just buy all of it. I'm like, between the two of us, I'm going to make sure you get everything you asked for. But then, of course, that would be a whole argument, too. Well, I didn't want you to give me everything. Well, tough shit. Well, you're getting it.
Mm.
Oh, my God.
Hair flying.
If you go through this house, you'll just find huge chunks of bob hair everywhere. And it's not because he sheds. It's because Dottie rips him out of his skull. Because they'll just fight, and she'll just go, and just big bob balls everywhere. Don't pet him. He doesn't deserve it. You're bad.
Oh, no.
I'm bad. Fighting with my kitty.
Nuh-uh, that was her. He was over there looking lovingly at the tree, and she was under the box, peeking out. He's like, well, fine, you want some? Come get some.
So, while all this is going on, the girls, the nieces, are just, like, quietly amongst themselves deciding that they basically ship Peter and Nick. Which is, like, such a me thing. It's something I would do. Especially if I was, like, bored with my family around Christmas. I would just, like, create drama to be obsessed with. So they're like shipping Nick and Peter. And then there's our obligatory shirtless moment that is in every Christmas movie. There's always one moment where you see the male lead without a shirt on. In this case, it's Nick, not Peter, but it's nice.
Not the one we watched yesterday.
Oh, yeah! What was that about? We watched Desperately Seeking Santa yesterday. And it starred, what's his name?
I don't know. I just call him Vince. I say, woohoo! When I see him, I don't know. He was on What I Like About You. I don't know.
It was some cheap, made-for-TV, shitty Christmas movie, and the whole conceit of the movie was like, had to be a sexy Santa. So you would think there would be obligatory shirtless moments. No, no.
Not one.
The whole, like, he was holding out the entire movie, and it never happened. But we got one in this movie, by God.
Yep.
Then we see a glimpse of Sandy's pageant rehearsal, which is not going well. She's, like, screaming at these children.
The title? Jesus H. Christ.
Why would the H stand for? I've always wondered that, where that came from. But so relatable. I'm like, that'd be me. I've directed children before, and I was very patient. But inside, I wanted to be like, listen! And I'm sure that the older I get, the thinner my patience will become. I will be
angry. I don't think that's true. I think it's the opposite. Definitely.
Sip break. What else happens? Scroll through my notes. Oh, James and Peter go skiing. But Peter is getting FOMO from not being with his family. They're all at home having fun decorating the tree. And the girls are like, and Nick are sending him pictures. So, James is already getting the sense of, like, he doesn't really want to be here. The nieces are everything. They're, like, whispering and talking about Nick and Peter. Like, Nick's right in the room. I don't even know how he doesn't hear them talking, but they're just conspiring in the corner. Meanwhile, the little nephews are, like, huge fans of Nick's book, which, how cute is that? And they're trying to encourage him to write a sequel. And the littlest one doesn't understand that Nick and Peter aren't married. Because they live together, and he doesn't understand the distinction, but that was really cute, too. He's like, how would he say? I don't know. It was just really adorable. For the love of God, Robert. Come here. Quit your belly aching, Buck Rogers.
I wondered if there was somebody out there. Talking to.
He's just being annoying. Huh, aren't ya? You being annoying. After they go skiing, James kisses Peter. But instead of staying and hanging out with James, he wants to go home because he's a FOMO-sexual and he was missing out. And James is very understanding. James is like, poor James. He just gets such a chip in this movie.
He does, and he's so hot.
He's so hot, and he's pretty much perfect.
I just really love how in love with his family this guy is. Mm-hmm. Because in most movies, even when you're, like, in love with your family, you're just like, ugh, yeah, I need a break. Or, you know what I mean? Most people would be happy to go on the date and get away from their family for a little bit. And all he does is wish he was with them. Mm-hmm. And wish he could move back with them. It's like, oh my God, I love that.
Yeah. And that's a good inversion of the trope, too, because a lot of times these movies are about someone ending up moving back home. You know what I mean? Like, they are from, like, a small town, and they move to a big city.
Begrudgingly at first,
yeah,
or whatever.
It's begrudging, and usually the reason they end up moving back is because they fell in love. It's like, fuck my family. I fell in love, so now I'm going to move back. This is the complete opposite. It, you know, chicken before the egg. He's comes back and he wants to move back, and that is the obstacle with the love instead of it being the other way around. Peter goes home, and Nick meets him outside, and they're talking, and they're all cute, and the whole family is watching from the window. Excuse me. And now they're getting all, the whole family is now getting involved. They all agree that Peter and Nick should be together. And they plan to make Peter and Nick work together on Sandy's pageant to force them to spend more time together. This is the point of the movie where I was like checking how much time was left, and I made the executive decision that this movie is about 20 minutes too long.
Yeah. That's where I wrote this down. I was like, we're more than halfway through and I'm already screaming, just love each other!
Peter finds out from his work that he has to deliver a whole new campaign in a day because his boss didn't like any of the Santa pictures, sexy Santa pictures, which I could have told you that. They sucked. So he takes Nick outside and makes Nick model for him out in the snow with like a face covered in shaving cream. It's really cute. It sounds like it'd be doofy, but it was really adorable. And Nick pulls it off because he's hot.
Oh.
And there's this great moment where he like makes Nick stand right in front of him and look into the camera and blow breath out because he wanted a picture of the fog of his breath. But there's like this great moment where they're like staring into each other's eyes and it's all chemistry and hot. It's great. Then James and Peter go on another date that, and they go to a bar owned by Peter's sister, Lisa.
Apparently the only bar in this town.
Yeah. Which is shocking that about tracks. Because they're like, where'd they go? Did they go to mom and dad's bar? It's like, well, it's the only bar in town, so I reckon that's where they went. And of course, everyone wants to sabotage it because they want Nick and Peter to be together. And Lisa's idea of sabotaging it is crashing into James, spilling beer all over him, blaming Peter, and then going on a rampage about how Peter is so inconsiderate and terrible. Like, of all the ways to break up two people, to be like, throw your brother under the bus and be like, you don't want to be with this guy. He sucks. It's like, Jesus Christ, Lisa. Pump the brakes.
I mean, you could tell he wasn't even buying it. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah, everyone was just looking like, what the hell just happened?
Because James, at no point in this movie, doesn't realize what the hell should really be happening.
Yeah.
Like, he's always like, are you sure you're not into your friend?
Yeah, because he's constantly talking about him. Like, you would, because they're your best friend and they live with you and everything. But it gets to a point where it's like, are you in love with them? Like, yeah, maybe. But we haven't quite reached that point yet. James hasn't quite given up the goat.
Yeah. You know,
he's still, like, pursuing it, kind of, tentatively. He's trying his best. Meanwhile, the nieces corner Nick and force him to admit that he loves Peter, which he does admit pretty readily, too.
Very quickly, yeah.
I mean, granted, they do steal his ladder and threaten to leave him on a roof, but he's still kind of like, yes, okay, yeah, I love him. So that's cute. And it happens, I mean, granted, this movie is really long, but it happens earlier in the movie than you would expect. Because a lot of times with these movies, the tropes in these movies, everything happens within the last, like, 5 seconds. And you're just like, oh, okay. It's kind of a whirlwind. But this one is kind of a slow burn where you know he loves him and he, you know, he loves him. And now it's just a whole will they or won't they thing. While they're out on their date, James points out yet again that he's talking a lot about Nick. Then Peter gets a message from his boss saying that he wants more of the pictures like he had taken with Nick. So he convinces James to let him take some pictures like on the street with the Christmas lights and being all cute. And they're cute. They're not as cute as Nick's, but they're still cute. And he does the same thing that he did with Nick where he wants him to stand in front of the camera and blow out air. And it's such a good piece of acting because he does the same thing, but there's just no chemistry between them when it happens. Like, it's just a moment. It's not, like, a moment with a capital M.
But when Nick sees that picture, you could see how heartbroken he was because I think it took him to that moment and he was worried that they had that same moment.
To add a little extra angst in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
But you also can tell that not only can the audience tell, hey, there's no spark, but you can see it in Peter's face. Like, that's when he realizes, oh, I don't have feelings for James like I do for Nick. when Peter gets home, the nieces have fallen asleep, quote unquote, fallen asleep in Peter's bed, so that to force him to sleep in Nick's bed. Which, like I told Lacey, was a gamble because he could just as easily have slept on the couch. But I appreciate the hustle. I also hate, because I read too much Smutty fanfic. That's another trope in fanfic, is it's just like, oh, they had to share, there's only one bed. Oh no, we have to share a bed. We're lost in a snowstorm and we're in a cabin and there's only one bed. Or, oh, our car broke down and there's a hotel and they only have one bed. Like, but the whole point of that trope is, like, you'll wake up tangled together. And so there's an awkward, moment. And if it's a Smutty fanfic, they end up fucking, which is, you know, what I want from my fiction, but whatever. Not everyone's the same. But this is, like, the second time I've seen a Christmas movie use that trope recently, where there's no payoff like that. It's like, what's the point of the whole point? Whatever. So we don't get that payoff. I think, what, Peter wakes up and Nick is already gone?
Yeah.
Yeah. Peter wakes up and the girls have decided to do their own makeup for the pageant. And they have turned themselves into sexy baby hooker versions of the Virgin Mary and a donkey.
Slutty donkey.
Slutty donkey. Like, the worst clown makeup. Garage door blue eyeshadow. Red cheeks. Just, oh, it was horrifying. And even their mom is just like, I don't even know what to say. I don't even know what to do.
Her sister's like, should have boys. Or maybe her mom.
Her mom, yeah. Which I don't think anyone has ever said on the face of this earth, ever. About us?
Just in general. Should have boys. Boys are easy.
Okay.
We're not going to open this Christmas box of family drama right now. I'm moving on.
No comment. Oh my god, and then we get the dance number, the obligatory dance number that I just imagined that Michael Mayer and Michael Urie decided needed to be in the movie. Peter and the nieces have a choreographed dance that they do to Santa, Can You Hear Me by Britney, which is one of my favorite Christmas songs, and I keep forgetting to put it on my Christmas playlist. Love that song. But they do a cute little dance, and it's cute. And Nick and the nephews come in and see them and join them. It's just, it's very heartwarming and adorable. And then we see the pageant. Jesus H. Christ. And I mean that in about 12 different ways.
Luckily for everyone, it's very short.
Yeah. It's like 45-second long pageant. But the lights come up on stage. There's a manger. And then there's Sandy, dressed like Glinda the Good Witch. Unclear why. She's rocking it. And she's like the narrator of the play. And all the nieces and nephews have big roles and are adorable. And there's like a lot of little screw-ups that make the audience laugh. And it's all very cute and well-received. And is it... Is it the next? No, it's right after the pageant, right? Because they're like in the kitchen of the community building.
Yeah.
After the pageant, Peter and Nick are in the kitchen and by themselves, and Nick confesses to Peter that he has feelings for him.
James is there, by the way, in the audience.
Yeah, he came to the pageant. And instead of saying, I love you too, because Peter's an idiot, he's all concerned that it'll ruin their friendship. Which, I hate that trope. It's so silly. Like,
especially after you see, when they're watching the pageant, they're sitting there, like, in this little kitchen window, all over each other.
Oh, yeah. All around each other. And I hate that. I get it. I've been there. I've done it. Where it's like, no, I won't go out with you because I don't want it to ruin our friendship. But anything can ruin a friendship if you let it.
Yeah.
It's like, if you have feelings for someone, try it. And if it doesn't work out, there's no reason you can't just go back to being friends. If you can't go back to being friends because of trying it and it not working out, then you maybe were never friends to begin with.
Right, so it would have happened eventually. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I hate that. It's just like, oh, because this movie isn't long enough, let's drag it out longer! So yeah, he's like, oh, but we don't want it to ruin our friendship, and Nick is like, well, I was sad when you said that you wanted to move here, because I'll miss you, and Peter's like, well, I do want to move here, and I don't know what that means, and blah, blah. And then they get interrupted by James. And they all end up going to get drinks at the bar. And Nick doesn't go, right? He makes some excuse.
Yeah, he leaves.
Oh, yeah, he leaves to work, to do TaskRabbit stuff, I think. But everyone else goes to the bar. And at the bar is Dan Finnerty, who is Kathy and Jimmy's husband, who you may all know as the wedding singer from
Old School.
From Old School. Was he in The Hangover too?
Possibly. I don't know if he was a singing in that movie, but he might have been in that movie. You'd know him if you saw him.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get it. Oh my god. I can't. I'll sing it all day. Yole, yole, yole. I had no idea that was Kathy and Jimmy's husband, by the way. That's crazy.
Yes, I told Lacey this little anecdote, but apparently when Kathy went to go to Quebec to film this, it was in the middle of COVID, and to travel into Canada, you could only travel if you were working, and he wanted to go with her. So they included him in the film. He wrote two original songs for the film, and then he appeared as this bar singer just so he could get a work visa to go with her, which I think is very cute. And he's very funny. So that song that he sings at the end during the credits, he wrote.
Oh, okay.
Let's see, I lost my place in my notes. Oh, Aunt Sandy comes over and hits on James. She's like, this guy has been looking at me all night. She goes over, and Kathy and Jimmy has to run over, and it's just like, no, honey, this is my trainer. I set him up with Peter. He's here with Peter. Wrong team, honey. And she's like, well, what'd she say? Something
we all like different
things. We all like different things, or something like that, which is very true and woke. She's like, you don't know.
Yeah.
Let her shoot her shot and shit.
Hey, that's chocolate. You're going to melt it with your butt.
Get off there, please. Thank you. Jeez. And finally, James is like, hey, Peter, you have feelings for Nick. And Peter's like, yeah. Basically, he's like, yeah, you're right. But Peter has already, I don't know if Peter has texted him or what has happened, but Nick has decided to go back home to LA. And so, but Peter doesn't want him to, obviously. He wants to stop him because he loves him. And he's like frantically calling and texting, and Nick's not picking up because he picked up a new TaskRabbit job. And at first, we just think he's painting this old, the inside of this old storefront in town as a TaskRabbit gig. And Peter's freaking out, and he tracks him on with the phone, like, tracking app thing, and follows him there, and confesses his love, and they've decided that, like, they're going to move to New Hampshire together, and everything's going to be great, and that that storefront that he's there painting, he bought for Peter so Peter can open a plant store. And then for Christmas, they tell the whole family that they're together, and they give the nephews the first draft of Peter's, or Nick's new book. Emmett at the Christmas Hotel. And at the end of it, he included the fact that Peter and Nick are together and live with Emmett in New Hampshire now and live happily ever after. And that's the end of the movie. Like I said, it is super freaking cute.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. It's not like uproariously side-splitting funny. I happen to think that Happiest Season is funnier. But in terms of feel-good movie, it doesn't piss you off epically like Happiest Season does. Happiest season to me is like, I told this to Heather, it's going to be like how It 2 is with me. I'll watch it constantly because I love it to an extent, but it'll get to a certain point where I don't want to watch the end and I'll just turn it off and pretend it didn't end that way.
Yeah.
I'm just like, and then Kristen Stewart ended up with Aubrey Plaza and lived happily ever after. But what can you do? Yeah. What'd you think of it?
I liked it. Like you said, it doesn't make you mad. It doesn't. It's just, it was nice. It was kind of sad to watch a squishy movie. I was like, my husband's so far away. But it was so good. I told him I wanted him to watch it.
That is so cute, but also so sad.
I know. It's only been like a couple days.
Yeah, this is the first time Lacey's been away from Sam this long for a while.
Yeah. Since 2018.
Yeah. Jeez.
He couldn't come with us. He had to stay home, and we miss him.
Yeah. Poor Sam. Maybe we'll record something with Sam when we go home.
Oh, he'd like that.
Yeah. So, that was about an hour. Well done. I did it. I know that wasn't particularly riveting, but it was cute nonetheless.
I think the only complaint I had about it was, like, right when it all came to a head. Like, that scene with them trying to, or telling each other they loved each other, or Nick telling him he loved him. Like, it just didn't, I don't know, the dynamics weren't there. It fizzled out too fast or something. Yeah. I don't know. I wish there was a little bit more of a heated conflict or something. I don't know. But other than that, I liked it.
Yeah. And I wish there had been more payoff to, I don't know, I just feel bad for James.
I was just going to say, could we have found James, man? They established that there are no gays in this town. Like, there's no choices for him. But I think he will move. Because Peter tells him, you need to strike while the iron's hot.
Yeah.
And can we discuss the fact that James ended up, like, with all these followers? What about Nick? Were they not busting down Nick's door?
No kidding.
Mm-mm-mm. I just wrote down, poor James, so hot, but have you seen Nick in a tank top?
Yeah, there's like a montage where they're building sets and stuff, and Nick is in a tank top, and Lacey's like, ooh, wife beater.
Even Sam, like, why do I say that? I hate even hearing it, but that's how you describe it. Like, if you say that, you know what kind of tank top it is.
Yeah. That's messed up. That, like, collectively as a society, we called it that. Yeah. Tell the audience what we're going to be doing tomorrow.
Gingerbread houses. I got whatever I wanted this week. I said, I'm coming on vacation. And Mom's like, what do you want to do? And I told her everything I wanted to do, and she made it happen. So she went and got us 4 gingerbread houses, and we invited some people over. And Hillary and I went and got extra cookies and candies and pretzels. And we're going to have a little gingy contest.
It's going to be super cute.
I think we should put them online and let people choose who the best one is without telling whose they are.
We should totally do that. When Lacey suggested it, I was like, can I be on your team? Because I'm, like, incompetent by myself. It would be a disaster if I had to make mine myself. But if I'm working with someone else that is competent, I'm like, yeah, sure. That sounds great.
I think the worst of it's getting the houses together. That's intimidating if you're not used to doing that kind of stuff. But once the structure is there, you slap the shit on there. Anything goes. It's great.
I suck with an icing bag, man. I tell you. Anytime Mom's like, help me ice the sugar cookies for Christmas, they are busted. And then I cry, and it's awful. I think she's finally learned not to ask me to do anything because I just have a panic attack and cry.
How different we are. I'm like, give it to me.
I was blessed with you. Like, if I didn't have you growing up, I would have been fucked. You were like my voice because I was too scared to talk. Or conversely, you're the reason why I never did.
No, that's why. You didn't have to. I know what she's saying. That's very common for people, the younger sibling, just to kind of, I don't know. We are very different. We work together well, though.
Yeah. You put us together, we're one full functioning
human. One functioning adult. Well, human, not adult. We're still not adult together, but.
Speaking of which, not being adults, we're having our Christmas morning on Sunday with Lacey, since, you know, having our Lacey Christmas. And, like, Mom got us all matching pajamas, and we're still little kids on Christmas. Like, we were all talking, my friends and I were all talking about how, you know, it's so hard because you just don't want cash necessarily, or you don't want just exchange gift cards with people, or you don't want to ask for things because we don't have too much stuff and all that kind of stuff. And I get that, but I could never, ever, ever deprive Mom the fun that she has of watching us open
stuff. Oh, that's it. Mom keeps it alive. Mom keeps it excited. She's like, she's dragging us out of bed if we're not, you know. We used to be up at like 4 or 5. Now it's like 7, 8. And she's like, come on! Yeah! She loves it.
Yeah.
She loves to give.
Yeah, if any Christmas I was ever like, oh, I just want money or I just want this, not only would she be disappointed, she would still go out and get me things. So if that's going to happen, I might as well have to say what it is.
Yeah.
Not that she wouldn't get me good stuff without my input. It's just, I might as well just tell her something I'd like. Half of my Christmas list, I joke about this, but it's 100% true. Half of my Christmas list yet, for the past couple years have been from Spirit Halloween.
Yeah, she's already done shopping for you by November.
Yeah. I take her to Spirit Halloween. I'm like, I want this, I want this, I want that. I sent her pictures off the website. I want that one. I'm easy.
That's what she said.
Well, that about wraps that up, I guess. It's getting close to the holiday season. There will be one more episode that comes out between now and Christmas. I think it'll go live on Christmas Eve or somewhere where about that time. It'll be with, probably with Miss Heather. And to be fair warning, Heather and I are probably going to end up talking about like multiple movies in one episode because I'll explain in a couple weeks, but we'll talk about more than one movie probably. But yeah, thank you for listening to this episode. I hope everyone checks the movie out and likes it as well. If you click the link in the Linktree link in the episode description, it will take you to our show's social media pages, where you should totally follow us and get in touch. You can also find our personal social media accounts through those. Feel free to leave a comment or a question or a request. You can message us either on social media or you can email us at wearetheweirdospodcast@gmail.com. Also in the episode description, you will find a link that will take you to our support page where you can make a one-time donation or sign up for a monthly patronage. That would be especially thoughtful this time of year if you want to give me a Christmas present in the form of a donation. Please and thank you. If you can't help us financially, you can help us by sharing this podcast with your friends and followers and leave us positive reviews on the different streaming services that you use to listen. And it'll help broaden our audience a little bit. An extra big thank you to my dear followers that listen to every episode. You know who you are. I appreciate you very much. And a thank you again to Lacey
for joining me. Thanks. It's always so fun.
And until next time, we are the Weirdos, Mister.